live on DAZN Worldwide.
Saudi Arabia.
Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern. Canelo versus Skull. The King stakes his legacy once more for the undisputed crown. Standing in his way is Warrior Skull, undefeated and poised to decimate the division on a knockout weekend of boxing.
Let's make history.
Get Canelo versus Skull, Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern, live exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Well, I guess I need to think of a reason why I can rationalize to the audience why I need a GLP-1, like dementia risk or something like that. But honestly, I just want to be a little bit more shredded and I just want to find a reason.
Well, I've got just the medication for you. The benefits include not waking up feeling like a pufferfish and feeling sharper.
Will it help my jawline? Because I just feel so puffy and bloated all the time. But I don't want to have to cut out my, cookie bars, which are protein bars.
The ones that are 600 calories, 20 grams of protein?
600 calorie protein bar. I want to keep eating those, and then I want to feel and look shredded and not bloated.
But you don't want to get Ozempic face.
Just a little bit.
So what's a guy like you to do? Well, everyone is microdosing Ozempic now, and we're going to talk about it.
Yeah. Will it help my allergies and inflammation too? I just want it to help everything, basically. Except I don't actually care about the health benefits. I just literally want it for the aesthetic benefits, and I want to be able to go to my med spa, but I don't want them to give me 10 times the dose.
Did I mention you're going to get more defined cheekbones?
Well, that sounds good. It's almost like plastic surgeons and dermatologists could be interviewed talking about how great this is in their patients, because plastic surgeons and dermatologists are trained very well to manage systemic medication.
They're trained very well in preventing type 3 diabetes.
Yeah, apparently so. I was surprised to see that you apparently read The Hollywood Reporter in your free time.
It's my favorite medical journal. It's where I find a lot of really breaking research. Mm. And this article is no different. It is entitled, "Forget Psychedelics. Everyone is microdosing Ozempic now." And they
For
health benefits.
Definitely not for other benefits.
I don't think this article mentions a single downside.
Burping and nausea. But they don't mention the actual downsides, like the theoretical risk of elevated growth hormone over a long period of time. They also don't mention the biliary risks, the gallbladder risks, basically. Mm. I think they do mention constipation. Maybe they don't. Yeah, this is very biased.
Well, they mention the nausea, right, and the burping, but those are not at micro doses.
Yeah,
is what they're saying.
The good thing is that micro doses, the side effects are dose dependent. So for a lot of people, the doses are pretty the side effects are pretty minimal. But the same thing with hormone replacement therapy. Again, for those people that are saying, HRT and GLP-1, being on those two things as tools has absolutely changed my life. These two things are our favorite medications. I think those are my top two, HRT and GLP-1s, because for so many Americans and people in developed countries, the benefit just far outweighs the risk. But
if you're a 44-year-old runner who wants to lose
four pounds was their example.
Does the benefit outweigh the risk?
Almost for sure not. And again, the same thing with HRT. It's insidious, which means it's a downside that you will never know that you had, which is the scary thing about this. And that runner maybe is, slightly more sarcopenic, slightly more osteopenic. And then perhaps instead of having a hip fracture at age 90, she has a hip fracture at age 84. and you're very likely to pass away within 6 months of a hip fracture for multiple reasons. But I mean, a lifespan of 6 years less seems like a pretty severe side effect to me. And maybe that's a little bit of hyperbole, but instead of focusing on this, perhaps she should have focused. I mean, she's 44. She's probably perimenopausal. Maybe she should have thought about adding weightlifting to her regimen instead of just running. And maybe she should have thought about some testosterone instead of a GLP-1 in order to get that same level of leanness. Now, would that have taken care of the bloat? Perhaps not. But a lot of people feel bloated in the face, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. They might just be hydrated, or maybe they need to make better choices with the sugary protein bars they eat.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think even in the short term, right, if you look at some of the worst outcomes, like you'll see the headlines and, you know, people that are prescribing a lot of GLP-1s are always quick to defend the medication. But, you know, I think I saw one, a woman wanted to lose 10 pounds for her wedding, right? And she either died or got gastroparesis.
Yeah.
That's a very short-term trade-off. So, no, we're not talking like 30, 40 years in the future breaking a hip. Mm-hmm. You're talking about something you thought was going to improve your quality of life because your appearance improves. And then having gastroparesis does not improve your quality of life.
Yeah.
And the risk is very low. I'm not saying that this is going to happen to even one out of 100 people that try a microdose of a GLP-1, but it's a possibility.
Yeah.
And if there's no real upside or there's better ways to get there cosmetically mm-hmm. with other methods, then the risk-benefit profile doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. Gallbladder attacks and retinopathy, eye pathology is also relatively rare, but we've definitely seen it.
Yeah, it's not a zero event.
Yeah. So it's something that, again, one of our favorite medications. We are very pro GLP-1, but I read things like this, quote, GLP-1 receptor activation has been linked to reduced anxiety and depression. They should also say it's also been linked to increased anxiety and depression.
Yeah, that's true. And erectile dysfunction, but anyway, I think that's it. Before we move on to this article, I do have one riddle for you. What is a top endocrinologist?
An endocrinologist that does NAD plus infusions in their clinic.
It means you don't know that GLP-1s lower blood sugar in non-diabetic individuals. I'm reading this from the article.
Oh, yeah,
they say
too.
The key is not decreased blood sugar, but decreased inflammation. In patients without diabetes, it doesn't lower blood sugar. Quote.
Ooh.
The STEP trials would like a word.
Yeah, that's rough.
Top endocrinologist.
Yeah. Well, how do you know if you're a top something? I guess ourselves included.
Depends on how much you pay for it.
Yeah. Everyone is invited to those top doctor, top NP things. It's just you just have to pay for it. So. The other thing that I was going to say is if you happen to be on a podcast or the media writes an article about you, then you're on a news show. So because you were on Fox News, you're all of a sudden a top doctor. We do have, you know, for those of us like myself that don't read The Hollywood Reporter, we do have actual news. We always call these the movie trailers, but these trials are not out. You wouldn't know that from all the news headlines. Now, the companies might be up or down, and mostly down in this case, but the trailer teaser results are out.
Yeah, we live in a world where not achieving 25% weight loss in about a year is considered, quote, lackluster. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
Yeah, kind of triggered that body fat percentage is not stated, and body fat pounds loss instead of weight loss. We still live in an antiquated world by where we go by weight as the primary, you know, thing that we're looking at. And I get it. That's what people are going to Google. And there's definitely an arms race between these big pharma companies that are the major players in this. So they want to have, they want to have market share. So when big companies, big functional, not big pharma, when big alternative medicine has Super Bowl ads for non-brand name GLP-1s, they're all upset and they run like counter hit piece ads and they're all just competing. So I think it's, you know, free market, just let them compete. But just to be honest about what the results are, disappointing that they don't release more data, and they don't release data that we would like to talk about, but we at least know the percentage of weight loss. So I think you posted on your Instagram 3% more for triple the dose.
Yeah, and I suppose this is one way to try to compete. If your prices from compounding pharmacies are per milligram, if you're a pharmaceutical company and you have the manufacturing capacity, you just raise the milligram amount to where, you know, compounders can't compete. But this trial, I don't think, panned out the way they wanted it to. And if we can just kind of flip back and forth between these two graphs, I made these, or more accurately, ChatGPT made these, because I think it's just very funny to look at the like huge relative difference in dose and the tiny relative difference in the total body weight loss. So we'll put those in the podcast for people to look at. And it just doesn't seem worth it. One thing I would like to see is the waterfall plot. You know, I'm a big fan of those where you can see each individual in the study and see, like, do we still see about a 10 or 15% non-responder rate if people are at 7.2? Or do you start to see more people are responding, or do you see some outliers who are losing a significantly higher amount of weight? Because you could individualize it, right, and see some people respond better. But for the average person, I mean, probably 80 or 90% of people are going to hit what's reasonable from just the 2.4 milligram dose.
Yeah, within a couple of standard deviations. Those waterfall plots tend to kind of follow a bell curve. But it looks like that semaglutide has relatively been maxed out. I think that's, you know, relatively safe to say at this point. For most people, the high dose is not necessarily worth the benefit downside trade-off. But we live in a brave new world, don't we? RFK is now in charge of all of our health, and we have no say. So, I mean, what would we do if he was in charge, or like if one of these big functional companies just give all these patients Osterine and some SARMs, and they would have much better results? Why aren't we doing that study?
SARMs are soon to be back on the menu. The last time they were on the menu was tailor-made compounding. It's like 2018. They were compounding, and you know, doctors, PAs, NPs were prescribing SARMs to people. But there was a top-line result for semaglutide plus enobosarm that came out. Two different doses, 3 mgs and 6 mgs. And maybe, Cameron, this is a question for you. What are the Redditors typically taking for their SARM doses of enobosarm?
Usually the max dose.
Which is what, 25 milligrams?
Yeah.
So it's a microdose.
So that is pretty low dose. I don't remember off the top of my head what the various trials for breast cancer or prostate cancer are, but pretty sure the highest is 12.5 or 15 mgs, with a lot of them lower than that. So, yeah, I mean, you wouldn't expect a huge result, but they actually had 100 people in the enobosarm, I guess, all dose plus semaglutide category.
They split it,
here,
you know, 50 and 50. So 50 of them were taking the 6 mgs, 50 of them were taking the 3 mgs. Mm-hmm. And these were older adults, and I think also those with like sarcopenic obesity.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you could argue that they were sort of primed to be a good responder, but they're also the people that have the most to lose potentially from taking semaglutide. And I think this trial is the first one that has actually looked at like physical function of some kind in people taking these. And not surprisingly,
fantastic,
like about over half of patients, you know, no, not quite half, but basically about half of patients got worse at going up the stairs.
Yep. In the placebo plus semaglutide.
Just semaglutide, yeah.
And then only, I believe only 19% mm-hmm. in the enobosarm, which is MK-2866, which is Osterine. Same thing. For such a low dose, I was even surprised how good this result was.
Yeah, it's attenuating the damage. So it's kind of like harm reduction. Like if someone is going to use one of these, then I presume the company thinks that this drug should be prescribed alongside it. You know, the body recomposition was a lot better. If you're looking at especially the higher dose, you lose about 50% more fat, mm-hmm. just an androgenic effect, you know, more fat burning.
Yep.
And you attenuate the lean muscle loss. Basically, you don't lose any muscle. You probably have a net gain. People can look in that column and see that it says, 9.4%, muscle loss from lean mass, but we know that about 10 or 15% of fat loss is counted as lean mass because of the water content in the fat cell.
Correct. So essentially, they lost no muscle whatsoever.
But what this also means is people screaming about how catabolic semaglutide is are also inflating that number because they don't necessarily understand this. So, it's really good for enobosarm. I don't think they're going to have a lot of success with their extension trial, but I'd be happy to be proved wrong.
Yeah.
What they're going to do is pull people off of the semaglutide, keep them on the enobosarm, and see if they keep the weight off. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a taper there. They didn't consult me for the study design, but I think a taper would be very appropriate.
Agreed. Yeah, absolutely. Crossover study would be interesting too. Mm-hmm. And adding an oxandrolone group would also be interesting. Which 6 mg oxandrolone versus 6 mg enobosarm, who wins? In terms of functional outcome and body comp.
Yeah, too bad oxandrolone just got pulled to pave the way for enobosarm to become a patented drug.
Yeah, probably so. It should be back though, especially if RFK is on a little oxandrolone from time to time.
Yeah, just in the summer, just when he wants to dry out and lose that last little bit.
Yeah, FDA approved in the summer and then not FDA approved the rest of the year.
Oh, goodness.
But in all seriousness, if one of the authors or someone who knows them happens to be listening to the podcast, we would love to consult on this and, talk about some of the real world data that we see. Even from places other than Reddit.
Actually, we said we didn't have the trial data, but apparently there's been a leak from one of the participants.
Yes. So
here we have day 5 of my Osterine cycle, 15 milligrams. It's an odd way to describe a clinical trial. But anyway, already noticed the effects. Days 1 through 3, I noticed a slight energy boost a couple hours after my dose, probably due to freeing of test. I assume their physician told them this is going to lower their SHBG and
increase
boost
their free
test
index. Yeah, their FAI is probably higher.
Feels good and had a slight confidence boost as well. Day 4, my muscles felt full and hard.
Nice.
Now day 5, chest tri-day, and the pump was absolutely ridiculous.
Never had such a huge pump. It has also been ripping fat off of me. Ouch. My abs are already more pronounced, and my muscles overall just feel tight. I don't know if that sounds desirable or not.
Tight. It's going to pull a hammer.
I get how some people say this does nothing because it's definitely working already. Side note, those people are probably people who have done big old steroid cycles. I assume this is, probably a 70-year-old female.
Adult.
The sarcopenia. Yeah, this is kind of how I'm
imagining. This is how 70-year-olds talk.
Yep. Someone's mother or grandmother, she probably has a history of breast cancer, was on aromatase inhibitors. So the pump is really great. We'll post pictures soon and we'll keep updating on the cycle.
Side effects so far, having to bleep like 4 times per day. Is that where the weight loss comes from?
Probably helps with less bloating, I guess. Yeah. Interesting. Well, this is a good report. Thank you to Cameron or whoever found this report. We'll continue
from
to look for
other favorite journal, reddit.com.
Yeah, we'll continue to look for other leaks from this trial. But yeah, props during this study. Extremely good idea. And honestly, I'm surprised that someone had the smarts to do it.
Yeah. Now, what does the path forward look? Let's assume that their extension trial does look good and they want to get this drug to market. Is it going to go through the traditional big pharma route, or are they going to just partner up with compounding pharmacies and have it prescribed that way? Because I don't know what the indication would be. Maybe sarcopenia, you could get it approved for that.
Yeah. Or for patients that happen to be on a GLP-1 that
a new
has a history of like ER-positive breast cancer or prostate cancer.
Yeah, just like you have a diagnosis of like, hormone replacement therapy. You could have chronic GLP-1 use as an indication for this therapy.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I know that there is a drug company that holds the patent that is studying it for various other things. So, and I don't think that it's Novo Nordisk or Lilly?
It's a microcap, very small pharmaceutical company, but they own the rights to that drug. And they've used it, like you mentioned, in some of these cancer trials and other sarcopenic states. And it does work reasonably well. I mean, people's quality of life and their day-to-day function, their activities of daily living are mm-hmm. better. And I haven't really seen safety concern. When they're using the lower doses, I don't think they're even looking at the 12 milligram anymore, because I think some elevated liver enzymes, something like that, if I'm remembering right.
Yeah.
But the 3 and 6 milligrams seem pretty reasonable and safe. Now, long-term in females, I have a little bit of concern about virilization, especially with the drop in SHBG.
Yep. And definitely.
If someone is sort of a PCOS baseline, like a lot of women with obesity have a overlapping PCOS, mm-hmm. not great candidates. So there's a perfect patient for this and people who are not so perfect patients for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Bone is not something that I don't think this study looked at bone mass. You'd have to study it for a longer period of time too. But regarding bone mass, I don't think we've talked about this before, but I am trying to go for a PR with my T-score.
Yeah, your bone density training regimen. So what's that, a bunch of like partial squats with 800 pounds?
No, but honestly,
just taking a supplement?
That would help. I'm continuing exactly what I do with my normal life, and then all I've done is I'd added in strontium.
Yeah.
Which just to see what my T-score in the DEXA scan gets up to. I think my last DEXA scan was 3.9. They put me in as a female at first, and I think it came in at like 5.3.
Yeah.
And I was like, that even seems a little bit high. And I think I had something like 10 pounds of dry bone too. Yeah.
And didn't a genetic test identify you as at risk for osteopenia?
Yeah.
So how do you feel about polygenic risk scores?
Yeah. Well, that one was not a polygenic risk score, but polygenic risk scores are absolutely trash. Almost no clinical significance for pretty much any polygenic risk score. But I did have 3 of 4 renal transporters for glycine and proline as pretty low functioning. So fortunately, I have one that's functioning relatively well. And I tend to not have proteinuria, but perhaps I should take some bunch of collagen protein that has a bunch of glycine and proline and then get a urinalysis later. Because at least from the genetic standpoint, I tend to pee out glycine and proline, which is associated with osteoporosis.
But you do consume a good amount already in the meat and the gristle and cartilage that you take in from animal protein.
So, obviously not at risk of osteopenia, and it's not really something that I recommend, but I'm just curious to see, can I get to 4.5 of T-score? Perhaps.
Yeah, this is your Brian Johnson arc.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, who has better bone density than me? Are you going to create the bone density leaderboard?
It's a good idea. Yes. We might as well. That'll be easy. So if you think you have high bone density, then go ahead and submit your T-score. If you're a male, then do not submit a female.
Yeah. Let us know your T-score in the comments.
Yep. Anyways, one thing that we thought about was calcitonin salmon. So, this is infrequently used for things like bone density, but there is actually a family of peptides. Let's make this as exciting as possible. A family of novel bioidentical peptides, which are great for increasing bone mass and decreasing body fat. Amylin, CGRP, and calcitonin receptor. So there's a lot of medications that are for migraines that are already approved for this, and of course, calcitonin salmon. But the newest ones are cagrilinotide, which is an amylin. Well, it's not just working on amylin. It's working on calcitonin as well. But CagriSema is cagrilinotide plus semaglutide, and we have the teaser trailer out for those results as well.
So CagriSema is probably going to be the first triple agonist to market, not retatrutide.
Ooh, but retatrutide, I've only had 50 patients request it because they say that their other doctors prescribing it from somewhere. Where are they getting that?
Yeah, that's really interesting. My best guess, and we've talked about this, is they're probably just relabeling it after they get it from a research chemical website. Yeah, so
that's what's happening.
Those providers have more money than morals.
Yes. And most of them are not MDs or NPs. So
health coaches.
Yep. Obviously, only recommend research chemicals for research animals.
Yeah. What? Stay tuned for our video, Top 5 Peptides for Your Rat. We'll be releasing that at some point in the future. But yeah, this is what kind of drove us down this calcitonin pathway. And this was the lackluster trial that showed only 22.7% weight loss. I think this was it 68 weeks?
Yes, 68 weeks. The silver lining behind this is even at 68 weeks, the highest dose still was accelerating with weight loss at the end. So it hadn't reached peak, which is pretty impressive that it hadn't happened. This was roughly the results that were seen with the Zepbound medication, obviously a competitor medication. So the stock did take a bit of a dump here. It was only 22.7 instead of 25. I thought that was pretty close. And for patients with less beta cell function that are basically closer to being insulin dependent, I would think that this is going to be far superior. So again, the waterfall plot, right patient, right medication. Mm-hmm. The closer to insulin-dependent diabetes you are, the better this is going to be.
Yeah, and not that many, but a lot of patients didn't reach the maximum dose, so a little over half. And, you know, the company or, you know, the article, the opinion piece was, well, maybe this was because of side effects, or maybe people were just happy with the amount of weight they were losing, which probably not the case because people want to lose more weight faster, which isn't always the best for health, but that seems to be the common goal and the goal of the pharmaceutical companies. Because if tomorrow a trial came out with retatrutide and people lost 35% of body weight in a year, you know, the stock would go through the roof because, you know, that's what the investors want to see. That's what people want to see. That's what a lot of doctors want to prescribe.
Yep. That would be a bigly result for sure. Another big result would be, what if they gained so much bone mass that they became worse at high rocks and keeping pull-ups, which caused them to pull back on the dose?
So their quality of life would be decreasing.
Yeah. So if I have a poor result in like a CrossFit competition or high rocks, at least I have the excuse, well, I'm taking strontium for my bone density, which makes my bone, it's not that I'm fat right now, it's because I'm big boned.
You're heavy boned.
Heavy boned.
Big boned.
Yeah, heavy boned.
Interesting.
Probably big boned, dude.
Kind of like a Wolverine.
Yes. So just keeping that excuse in my back pocket, just in case. But in all seriousness, this is a pretty low percentage of people who are able to tolerate the dose. So we should see what that is when this full study is released.
Yeah. Yeah. And I go back to this a lot, but I think people should graduate from weaker GLP-1s to stronger GLP-1s. I speculate of someone who was, let's say, taking their semaglutide to lose their 10 pounds for the wedding or whatever. If they would have been started on liraglutide, maybe they'd realize, hey, this doesn't agree with my stomach. Probably a bad idea. You don't have to go to the strongest, you know, one of the strongest drugs out there.
Definitely.
To try and get that. So people are starting weight loss, start with something like your liraglutide. Graduate to semaglutide or graduate to, you know, tirzepatide. And then if you're, you know, refractory and you're still trying to improve body composition, you can graduate to retatrutide. Mm-hmm. Slowing the weight loss down is going to be much better. But I am a little less optimistic than usual. I don't think that the traditional medical world is going to be like, you know what, that's a great approach. Let's do that.
Yep. They want that cash now. I mean, they want that body comp right now. One thing with amylin analogs that's going to be interesting, again, is that interaction with CGRP. If you take cagrilinotide, will it improve your migraines? Is it like a low dose of Emgality or Aimovig, which are injectable migraine meds?
Yeah, there's a little bit of data with calcitonin receptor agonists that they have a kind of like a blunting effect on pain in general. So you take it, you might be able to push a little bit harder in your CrossFit and HYROX workouts because you won't feel the pain. Now, this is usually done with like rats on a hot plate and that kind of thing. So maybe people can just hang out in the sauna a little bit longer.
Burpees are basically the same thing.
basically a hot burpees over a hot plate.
Yeah. Interesting. And that is on CGRPs.
This is on calcitonin receptor agonists. So there's one that's supposedly stronger than cagrilintide called KBP-336.
That sounds
so
strong.
It sounds very effective.
Safe. Sounds very safe. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would, my rat would take that.
One of the top five peptides for your rat.
Yeah.
Boy, our sarcasm detector is going to be going bonkers for this podcast.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of dings. But one interesting thing that I found that I actually did not know, and we'll put the links to these studies below, salmon calcitonin and other forms of calcitonin, blah, 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 are not just calcitonin receptor agonists, but also by far the most potent amylin receptor agonists. Of course, this is before the long-acting amylin analogs are out, but this was written in 2020 when I believe it was pramlintide, the very fast-acting, like three-time-a-day amylin analog was out. So apparently that activity is pretty potent, and salmon calcitonin does decrease meal size in rats and also at the right dose decreases meal size in non-human primates and also decreased meal frequency at the highest dose in non-human primates. So for patients that do have this kind of sarcopenic, osteopenic obesity, especially if they're pre-diabetic or diabetic, this might be a great off-label option.
Yeah. Still requires resistance training and protein intake, but it is something that if the currently available amylin analogs are not looking, you know, promising, then you already have this. You can go get a prescription for it today. Or write a prescription for the appropriate patient.
Yep. I would not be surprised if bodybuilders start using this off-label. The title we can have when we talk about this in maybe a separate podcast is Better Than Follistatin Gene Therapy and Safer.
Because the heavier your bones are, the stronger you can grow your muscles.
Yes, and
are
also...
Are you thinking in a contest prep
If you're... Also, if you're cutting bulking, you're less insulin resistant. Protects your pancreas more.
Oh, I see.
Especially if you're also injecting.
Yeah, insulin. The most important muscle, the pancreas.
Yeah. For longevity of bodybuilders, I guess, pancreas, liver, and cardiorenal in general. Yeah. There is one other product that's being studied. I do not believe we have the teaser trailer for this. Certainly not the phase threes, but there's one in phase 1/2. They didn't specify 2A or 2B, but they love
my
to do
favorites.
This. 1/2A/2B/3A. It's oral amycretin. So it's kind of, they have the Rybelsus product, which is oral semaglutide. I assume this is the same exact delivery mechanism. I don't know if that's an incretin or an amylin, but I assume it's both amycretin. So I assume that this is just their semaglutide, cagrilintide oral product. Which I know it is in development, but I just didn't know the name of it. It
should be more effective in terms of percent weight loss than their Rybelsus.
Yeah.
The Rybelsus seems to be pretty well tolerated, and maybe you graduate to their amycretin product after you cap out on their Rybelsus product.
Yeah. It's kind of infuriating how they stack these so that they're going to get FDA approval like every 3 or 4 years.
No,
because they know
anymore.
All these combinations.
There's going to be reform there, right? Right?
I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. Maybe there will. Who knows? But that would be nice as, there's obvious combination products that you just know are going to come out. And just study them all at the same time. It's just one big trial. You don't need a separate trial for your, oral versus injectable amylin GLP-1.
Yeah, they're like laddering their approvals and drug releases.
Yeah.
So it's like a paced race. It's not a real race.
That's why.
Call it a rat race.
It is rat race, yeah. Well, at first it is. I think that pretty much sums up this info. Sorry for the listeners that were expecting more robust data other than just kind of the teasers, but we'll obviously continue to update on these things. Hopefully they were entertained by the combinations of Enobosarm with semaglutide and cagrilintide with semaglutide.
Yeah, I think these are certainly exciting trials. Even the top line results are kind of fun to read through, and knowing a little bit about how these drugs work, hopefully we can provide some insight. So let us know what questions you have that we didn't answer, and we'll be sure to incorporate those into our next GLP-1 update when the full trials are available.
Like our most common question, which I'll just ask you now. What reputable website can I get this to without having to see one of you guys as my physician? Both for peptides, where can I get my cagrilinotide? Where can I get my enobosarm?
Go to www.idontcareaboutmyhealth.com.
Yeah, that it's crazy how common of a question that is. There is, I guess we should promote our business as well, right?
Oh, yeah.
Continue to feed the children that the larger and larger stock of children that both of us are accumulating. But yeah, in all seriousness, you do not have to sign up with James or myself if you want a lower price point option and you're super interested in something like this. We do have several other nurse practitioners and physicians at a better value price point that still provide extremely high quality of care. They will be unbiased. We do not make any money selling. Like, for example, you go to a med spa or a functional medicine clinic or even an obesity specialist in LA. I guarantee you they're making money off selling you their NAD plus and semaglutide. Yeah. You come here, we sleep well at night. Our membership cost is how we make our money. And then
our medications is how we lose our money.
Our medications is how we actually lost money on medications, because some places make the clinic pay for the medication because it's a fourth the price if the patient pays. And we just pass along those savings to everyone. So again, that's our full transparency. So any questions about that, please do leave comments below.
Yeah. And as always, thank you for your time and for listening. And may God bless you with health and happiness.
Live on DAZN Worldwide.
Saudi Arabia.
Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern. Canelo versus Skull. The king stakes his legacy once more for the undisputed crown. Standing in his way is Warrior Skull, undefeated and poised to decimate the division on a knockout weekend of boxing.
Let's make history.
Get Canelo versus Skull, Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern, live exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com.
What's standing between you and your first sale on Shopify? Time, expertise, resources? What if you could multiply all three? Product descriptions? Done. Store insights? Delivered. 2 a.m. customer questions? Handled instantly. Entrepreneurs on Shopify are reaching their first sale faster with AI that works with you. Go to shopify.com/firstsale to see how entrepreneurs use AI to grow their businesses faster. That's shopify.com/firstsale.